Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. I see that in the modern liberal, leftist, Jewish, black world, that a lot of whites are very confused about many things. Of course, Jews are always busy confusing every issue that they possibly can, because confusion and stupidity are utterly necessary for Jewish survival and for Jews to move forward. So lots of things confuse whites and fool whites, because everything's been redefined. So up is down, left is right, darkness is light, and every conceivable aspect of society has been turned on its head. I can't blame most people for being very confused, especially in America. If you take a look at the photo there on the screen, for example, among all the bullshit that we have to believe is we have to believe that this is a Jewish woman. Actually, it's a fat Jewish slob of a man who apparently transitioned into being a fat Jewish slob of a woman. And exactly how woman this person is, I don't know, and truly I just don't want to know. But this fat Jewish slob is the Secretary of Health of America. Added to this whole story is the fact that this person clearly isn't able to look after their own health, but they're in charge of everybody else's health. And then somewhere along the line in all these processes, and I truly don't want to know the reason how this happened, is that this Jewish slob then also gets commissioned as a 4-star admiral in the American Navy, there on the right hand side. If you know anything about the military, then you will understand that these uniforms are not meant for just anybody. To wear a uniform like that with those particular insignias and insignias of rank, etc., this stuff is stuff that you struggle to get to during the course of a lifetime of commitment, and you've got to risk your life, you've got to do dangerous things before you even come close to getting these things. Yet this Jewish bag of garbage is a 4-star US admiral, and I can only tell you that it must be utterly demoralizing, if not totally outrageous, to anyone with any kind of military understanding, that this bag of crap ends up wearing that uniform. This is not a party uniform. This is something that has serious meaning. You don't get to be generals, admirals, or even high-ranking officers if you haven't done amazing things. But of course, if you're a Jew, then you just make it up as you go along, and they just talk their Jewish shit in order to achieve these things. So you might actually be forgiven for thinking this is a real woman. This is a real woman who became an admiral as a status symbol for women, and let's just not even go down that path. Transgender, blah, 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 and all that assorted crap. This kind of stuff could fry your mind, and when you see these kinds of things, then I can understand how whites can get confused about everything, because Jews are busy confusing everything they possibly can. So anyway, Rachel Levine in 2021 became the first openly transgender 4-star officer in the United States military. I don't even want to know how the hell this happened as part of all this assorted Jewish crap. But when whites are faced with trying to understand how the world works, and also trying to understand ourselves and the future and the past, then it is quite conceivable that as you wade through all these mountains of liberal Jewish communist garbage, that eventually you don't know up from down and right from wrong, and you can't tell the difference between success and failure, and you don't really know anymore what is intelligence and what is stupidity. This reminds me of another instance of stupidity, which was when Obama tried to do his communist health nonsense in America, and at a point they had to build a website, and they spent $1 billion building a website. $1 billion. Now, as a computer programmer and someone who can do some programming on a website, I must tell you, I can't stop laughing at the notion that they spent $1 billion on a website. I don't care how many people have to visit the website. I don't care how sophisticated the website is. I don't care all the things that that website can do, because there is no ways in hell that a website can cost you $1 billion. There are entire banks in South Africa with millions of customers that have got websites and computer facilities that can process anything. And I assure you that they didn't spend $1 billion on their systems. So normal people might be forgiven for looking at some of these things and actually thinking that this stuff is real and that it is a sign of some kind of success. So I notice that when whites talk about success and when they assess situations, including our own possibilities for survival, etc., that people get very despondent because they look at, let's call it, these Jewish examples of success and progress, and it demoralizes them, not to mention that it confuses them. Obama, I must remind you, is mixed race, half Jew, mother was Jewish, and if your mother was Jewish, then that makes you a Jew. He was a mixed race, communist faggot, drug taker, and he wasn't an American citizen. He was an illegal president of the United States. He was probably the first truly illegal president of the United States. He is not allowed to take office. In order to be an American president, you must be born in America. And Biden is the next truly illegal president of America. He didn't win that election. So when you see all these kinds of things, then you don't know anymore what is success, what isn't success. When I worked in the corporate world, I noticed when the blacks and the Indians became the bosses that they defined success in somewhat similar terms. They began to boast about how much money a project was costing or how many people were on the project, and that would be their sign of success. But that is not the way that I judge success. And I'm going to show you the white method of understanding success and what really is skill. People are so confused now that a lot of the things that we whites have created, our creations have been so successful that we as a civilization and as a people actually make others successful who otherwise would have died of starvation, or like the Jews, they would have been small-time crooks. It is really our civilization that enables others to succeed. The reality of the matter is that whites who regularly do the impossible and are the real energy behind all progress on this planet, it is really whites who have an almost insane ability to carry everybody else on their shoulders. We whites have an almost limitless ability to solve problems. We not only solve simple problems, we solve problems that are impossible to solve for others. We do it with such regularity and such frequency all the time, everywhere, that we actually take our own abilities for granted. And even more hideously, we take the abilities of our ancestors for granted, because our ancestors overcame even greater difficulties than we overcame. Here in Africa, I've noted, for example, endlessly, that whites are the people who solve everybody's problems, even though we are just a few. And it doesn't matter where the whites are, in which part of Africa we lived. It is the same everywhere. And I watch in South Africa to this very day, I watch with great fascination how, as problems come up, it is always whites who are called in to solve them. It is always whites who have yet another plan. Whites are never at a loss for ideas. Whites are also never intimidated by any problem. Even all this electricity junk that we've got currently, if you go and you dig deeper into that, maybe one day I'll make a bit of a video about some of the history of this and we can have a look at some of it. But right in there, you will see very clearly that it was whites who created something, blacks came and mismanaged it, and now whites are sort of struggling to help the blacks to fix things, but there are problems in the way this relationship works, which I'm not going to go into here. It's not relevant for this video. I have seen time and again whites coming up with solutions to every single problem blacks have. I've seen it over and over again. But what is really important is that our civilization and our way of living has enabled us to be so successful at solving problems that we just take everything for granted. And we think that everybody else should be able to do the same, when in fact they can't. But now you have people lying about what they can and can't do. You've got Jews lying about what they can and can't do, and you've got blacks also busy hiding the reality. There used to be the term the white man's burden, and the white man's burden was mostly colonialism, but among his burdens is also the Jew who's climbed onto our backs. It's all these parasites that we carry around with us. Our civilization is unique in that it is a non-parasitic civilization. I did discuss parasitic civilizations a little bit in my video about Professor Quigley. I want to return to Quigley, actually, to go through all of Quigley's stuff, because there are things that he said that are very important. But anyway, our civilization is non-parasitic, and it is so successful that it produces more than it needs. All other civilizations are parasitic. Parasitic is the normal state of nature. The normal state of nature is that everything is a parasite. A parasite is a thing that feeds off other things. So, strictly speaking, a lion is a parasite. A shark is a parasite. Because the lion doesn't produce its own food. The shark doesn't produce its own food. It needs to hunt its food. But the producer of its food is the animal that it's killing. So the lion does not farm with the antelope. And the lion doesn't increase the size of the zebra herds. The lion simply eats what is available. Now, all humans, including whites, used to be parasites. But there are those in the modern world who've remained parasites. Jews have remained parasites, and so have some of our other, let's call it, non-white companions. And everybody's climbing on the white man's back, and everybody wants in to the white man's civilization. But as they come into the white man's civilization, the next thing you know is they become lawyers. And some of them even become admirals. And then you get them becoming pilots and astronauts and everything. And then white people turn around and they say, but you know what? These people are equal to us. They are equal. You know, you just had a black going into space. He's equal to us. He can fly a plane. He can do this. He can do that. But the reality is that if you really had to go and study it carefully, you would see that it is actually the white who's made them successful. You see, if the Jews or any of our other parasites were truly successful, they would have invented the spaceships. They would have been the first to put their kind into space. They might even have taught us how to do it. But that is not the case. They come to us, into our civilization, and then we turn them into admirals, pilots, scientists, and everything. Now, if we had retained our original standards, then they wouldn't have been astronauts, they wouldn't have been pilots, they would not have achieved any of those successes. We would have prevented them from even becoming those things. If you truly look at what whites achieved originally, you'll actually see how difficult it really was. Take, for example, the first whites who flew a plane, the Wright brothers. Look at the early days of aviation. And you will see that lots and lots of white men died. They died from all kinds of things that went wrong. Planes that had problems. All kinds of things that were unknown. But white men were on the edge of the unknown. It was not Jews or blacks who were exploring the unknown and dying in the process. It was whites. So whites come, they do the impossible, then as time goes by, whites refine and learn all the things that are necessary. And whites make it easier and easier to fly. They solve all the engineering problems, the structural problems, the materials problems, the engine problems. They eventually build computers. And the computers start flying the planes, And then along comes some third worlder, and you put him in a plane which has got a computer, and you give him the rank of pilot, and there he flies a plane. But it was the whites who did all the impossible things for decades. Vast numbers of whites died in the process. And then you get the parasites coming, and we eventually make it so easy that parasites can survive. And then we turn around and we say, but there are equals. No, they're not. They're not. If you had put them in the same situation, they would never have come even 1% of the way that we came. And all our parasites, by the way, get to see us doing impossible things, then they want in on our action. Whereas we had to conceive of things before anybody had any clue how to do it. But we were the only people who figured out how to do the impossible. Now, one man who saw this absolutely clearly and was pointing this out over 100 years ago is Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler was pointing all these things out over 100 years ago. So I want to read to you a little section from Mein Kampf, the Stalag edition, which is the only version of Mein Kampf that was translated into English that the original, let's call it Nazi Party, the NSDAP, approved. So let me read from Mein Kampf. Because Adolf Hitler is busy talking about talent. And talent equates to intelligence. In this case, talent and intelligence, something that is specific to our people, that we have higher intelligence, higher talent than others. Which Jews are doing their utmost to cloud that issue and to pretend that that's not real. Jews are going to tremendous lengths to hide this and to try to lie about it. So I want to read this section from Mein Kampf where Hitler talks. He's talking about the Germans, but he's also talking about non-whites and how the Jews are busy fooling even the Germans. So Hitler writes, "Creative work in this field can be done only through the marriage of knowledge and talent. One example will suffice to show how much our contemporary world is at fault in this matter." And Hitler says, "From time to time, our illustrated papers publish for the edification of the German Philistine the news that in some quarter or other of the globe, and for the first time in that locality, a Negro has become a lawyer, a teacher, a pastor, even a grand opera singer or something else of that kind. While the bourgeois blockhead stares with amazed admiration at the paragraph that tells him how marvelous are the achievements of our modern educational technique, the more cunning Jew sees in this fact a new proof to be utilized for the spreading of the theory with which he wants to infect the public, namely, that all men are equal." So what Hitler is pointing out here, let's read this particular sentence or paragraph again, where he says, "While the bourgeois blockhead stares with amazed admiration at the paragraph that tells him how marvelous are the achievements of our modern educational technique." In other words, these people would never have become lawyers or teachers or any of those things. It is through our ability to teach them. And our methods of solving the problem of educating those people. If it wasn't for us overcoming that problem of educating them, they would never have achieved those things. Now, Hitler was writing this before the existence of modern computers and software, and I can tell you that nowadays, with computers and software, you can take any task, no matter how complicated, and you can let a moron do almost anything. He doesn't have to understand how it's done. He can just go and press a few buttons on a computer. So again, it's not that the moron is cleverer. It's that our civilization has created the mechanisms that allow a fool to do things that previously would have required a lot of intellect. Consider, for example, learning calculus. Calculus is complex. If you had to go and learn calculus properly, by hand, etc., you'll see it's a very complex, very sophisticated thing, and it is very intense. But you can get any monkey to do calculus by simply letting a computer program do the calculations. He then doesn't need to know the techniques, the methods, the theory, or anything. You can just enter some numbers on a screen, press a button, and the calculations are done. So there are all kinds of things that we've invented that make all kinds of jobs possible. Go back to the original aircraft, to the pilots who had to know how to start an engine, how to handle those old engines with all their problems, who had to use the rudder and all the controls and have to learn to develop the feel and the theory for how fast do you make the plane go, at what point do you start taking off, what can you do safely, all the problems of takeoff, all the problems of landing, because these are the very complex parts of flying. And then if you were to go and loop the loop and all that kind of stuff, you would have to develop serious amounts of skill, thousands of hours of flying in order to learn how to do acrobatics, etc., etc. But nowadays, we've made our machines intelligent, and you can almost put a fool behind the controls, and the plane would still fly quite fine. The French, for example, were the first who had planes, passenger planes, that could do everything. It could take off, fly, land. The pilot was there just to do a couple of things and to just be there to check and take control if there is some kind of real problem. He doesn't even really need to fly. I'm talking about these Airbus planes. So what Hitler is trying to point out is that we're ignoring our own achievements. We are the ones that achieve things and we make others look good. The Jew, of course, as Hitler points out, sees this, and Hitler was way ahead of his time, as usual, when he says, "The more cunning Jew sees in this fact a new proof to be utilized for spreading of the theory with which he wants to infect the public, namely, that all men are equal." So, we make things easier. The Jew sees how he can abuse that and then use that against whites. The Jew can use white success, genuine white success, and boomerang it on the whites and then say to the whites, "But see, you aren't better than anybody else." And that's exactly what they do these days. So all these things help to confuse whites, and whites don't understand and don't grasp excellence and genius. To truly grasp genius, we need to go back into ancient times, which we will do. But I want to give you a more recent example from history. To give you an idea of true white genius in relatively modern times and how you really need to judge things. A lot of whites, when they look at the problems that we face as a civilization, they are saying we don't have access to so many billions of dollars, we don't have access to this, we don't have access to that, therefore we're going to die. And lots of whites think in these very uninspiring, bland ways, and then they give up easily and they feel defeated. So, let's turn to whites who are real geniuses and what they have to say. I like military men for many reasons, and as I study my history more and I think more about life, I must tell you, my admiration for military men and the great military men just increases, and I become ever more convinced that a military way of life for all whites is an absolute necessity, and it will lead to splendid success. Now, one of the problems with people learning history is that history is taught badly, as far as I'm concerned, because history ignores the fact that people who make history are human beings like the rest of us. They are people who struggle and live in all kinds of difficult situations, and then they begin to overcome problems. But when they face problems and when they succeed, we tend to take success for granted. We tend to read the history books and we open the book and we read, let's say, the history of Hitler and the Third Reich. And we read it from beginning to end and we see the rise of the Third Reich and the fall of the Third Reich. And then we say, well, that is how it happened and it couldn't have been any other way. But in actual fact, we are missing out on all kinds of things. We are missing out, firstly, on whether it would even have happened and was even possible. Was it even possible to achieve what these people did? How many problems did they overcome in order to achieve what they did achieve? How difficult was it to get as far as they managed to go? And if anybody else was put in the same situation, would they have achieved even 10% or 20% or 1% of what those people achieved? Would they have lasted even a tenth of that time or achieved even a tenth of what Hitler achieved? And the truth is that they wouldn't have, because these were people who were very determined, very clever, and they gave it their all. But whites do this often in history, where they give their everything and they try their hardest and they face real danger and all kinds of situations that are nasty. And nobody does this more than military people. They have to face danger all the time. They have to do difficult things all the time. And when they succeed, again, we tend to just overlook it. And we say, oh well, Napoleon won, 20 battles and ha, that was nothing. Anybody could have done it. I could have done it. And the truth is, could you have? Could you really? Could you have achieved even 1% of what Napoleon achieved? The same is true for Julius Caesar. The same is true for Alexander the Great. And if you were to look into science and you had to look at the achievements of Leonardo da Vinci or some other great scientist, whether it's from the distant past or more nearer to our times, would you really have been able to do what they did? A guy like Leonardo da Vinci was busy trying to think logically about flight. He actually made notes and he started coming up with some ideas for possibly how you could fly. And he was doing this hundreds of years ago, before there was something like a internal combustion engine or anything like that. He didn't have a fraction of the facilities that we had later. But yet he was able to start conceiving something that to everybody else was impossible. He was actually starting to reach some conclusions. So probably one of the most disgusting aspects of studying history is that whites everywhere take almost everything for granted. And they don't really look closely to see what it was that allowed some people to do amazing things. So it is mostly, for example, military people who go to military colleges who get to really study certain history in detail, and then afterwards they start to grasp, what is it that set this man apart from that man? The same is true in science. The same is true in all aspects of science and mathematics. It takes somebody a long time to get the necessary skills to learn, let's say, mathematics, and to then be able to sit down and start asking questions. How was it that this white man managed to figure out this thing? Take, for example, calculus, invented by Isaac Newton. He had to invent a whole new way of approaching mathematical problems in order to figure out and develop a technique to solve this exceptionally complex problem. And when he solved it with insane precision. He actually could totally solve this problem exactly. A problem that was very, very super complex. We will shortly start the Gods of War series, but in there we will study specific battles and things and certain things that white men did, and then you will begin to see genius, courage, and the true brilliance of military people at their finest. These are the kinds of things that you don't learn in school, and only people who are truly deeply fascinated by these subjects are even able to realize these things. So here are two white men who were known for doing the impossible in the real world. Napoleon on the left, Alexander the Great on the right. Those two men did things that were utterly impossible. There were things that they did that nobody could conceive at the time you could do, but they did it. And they risked their lives doing it. So here are two quotes from white men who did the impossible multiple times. Alexander the Great said, "There is nothing impossible to him who will try." Napoleon said, "Impossible is a word to be found only in the dictionary of fools." So this is not some idiot on the street saying this. These are quotes from men who did the actual impossible. So let us look at an example where Napoleon chided somebody. Napoleon was talking to someone and this person complained. And I want to show you what Napoleon had to say. So this piece that I'm about to read for you, this comes from Napoleon, and this was right at the end of his career, when he was in exile on the island of St. Helena before the British got round to murdering him. For a period of time, he had some companions, and they willingly went into exile with him. They stood by him even though he'd now lost power. That in and of itself is the kind of stuff that we will look at more closely. When men are willing to risk their lives and suffer alongside their leaders because they have such respect for those men. These are things that in modern times, in this silly, idiotic world we live in this Jewish, chaotic, upside-down world that we live in today, these are things we cannot understand. But these kinds of things happened tens of thousands of times in the history of our race, where men bonded and men trusted and men stuck together no matter what. So what is happening here is that Napoleon is on St. Helena and various of his companions are busy making notes about things that they discuss and things that he dictates. And this is from one of those memoirs, and it's by a guy called Les Cases. I'm going to use the English pronunciation. I'm just not capable of doing the French any justice. So it's actually a guy who used to be an aristocrat. And when Napoleon and the revolutionaries were in charge, the aristocrats fled. This guy had actually fled France and lived in Britain. And Les Cases later returned to France because Napoleon allowed the aristocracy to return, the upper classes to return. And this guy returned to France and he later even began to work for Napoleon. And Les Cases basically took a step down. But as he worked for Napoleon and got to know Napoleon, he became more and more impressed with Napoleon until when all was lost, he decided he was going to go with Napoleon. No matter where Napoleon goes, no matter what happens to Napoleon, he would go with him. Interestingly enough, he actually takes his young son with him. And his wife is still back in France, but Les Cases and his 10-year-old boy are among the people that accompany Napoleon to St. Helena. So I want to read to you from a discussion where Napoleon is talking to somebody else in their entourage, and this guy talks about what he's up to, and he is busy trying to learn something. Now he's run into a problem. And he complains, and listen to what Napoleon says to him. So it says, "One of the suite, having a few days ago proposed making some chemical experiments, the emperor, Napoleon, inquired whether he had been successful. The other complained of not having the necessary apparatus." So this is what Napoleon says. "A true child of the Seine," said Napoleon, "an absolute Parisian cockney. Do you think you are still at the Tuileries? True industry does not consist in executing by known and given means. The proof of art and genius is to accomplish an object in spite of difficulties, and to find little or no impossibility. But what do you complain of?" Now, in this case, this guy wants to do some chemical experiments. So he's obviously learning something to do with chemistry. And in chemistry, you may want to crush things, so you use a mortar and a pestle. So Napoleon says, "The want of a pestle, when the bar of any chair might answer your purpose, the want of a mortar, anything is a mortar that you choose to convert to that use. This table is a mortar, any pot or kettle is a mortar. Do you think you are still in the Rue Saint-Honore, amidst all the shops in Paris?" So now what happens is, another one of the entourage pipes up. This person is known here as the Grand Marshal. and it says, "The Grand Marshal here remarked that this circumstance reminded him of something that had occurred the first time he had the honor of being presented to Napoleon, and of the first words he had received from him. When Bertrand was about to leave the army of Italy to proceed on a mission to Constantinople, the young general, perceiving that he was an officer of engineers, gave him a commission relative to that department. On my return," said Bertrand, "I came up with you at a short distance from headquarters, and I informed you that I had found the thing impossible. On this, Your Majesty, whom I had addressed with great diffidence, said with the most familiar air, 'But let us see how you set to work, sir. That which you found impossible may not be so to me.' Accordingly," continued Bertrand, "when I mentioned the means by which I had proposed to execute what Your Majesty wished, you immediately substituted others. In a few moments, I was perfectly convinced of the superiority of Your Majesty's plans, and this circumstance furnished me with sentiments and recollections which have since proved very useful to me." So, let's return to the first issue. The first issue was the guy who wanted to do some chemical experiments here on this island where they are in exile. And when Napoleon asks him whether he'd been successful, he says that he doesn't have the necessary apparatus in order to do his experiments. So, Napoleon chides him and he says, "A true child of the Seine, an absolute Parisian cockney." And there at the bottom of this paragraph he says, "Do you think you are still in the Rue Saint-Honoré amidst all the shops in Paris?" No, you can't go to the shops to go and buy things. This is what I've been talking about, the shopping mall mentality that so many whites have. Lots of whites have got it, even in South Africa still. But the key thing that Napoleon tells him is this. He says, "The proof of art and genius is to accomplish an object in spite of difficulties, and to find little or no impossibility." So let's go through that sentence again. He says, "True industry does not consist in executing by known and given means. The proof of art and genius is to accomplish an object in spite of difficulties, and to find little or no impossibility." So he's telling you that the proof of genius is that you must move forward even though there are difficulties. And ultimately, you must overcome all of them. There must be nothing that is impossible to you. You must find solutions to all the problems until you can do it. That is the proof of genius. To achieve something with everything at hand, that's no real achievement. But a real achievement is to do something when you actually don't have all the means. You don't have all the tools. You don't have all the resources. And still you are able to achieve it. That's what he's telling you. And then in the second paragraph, where Bertrand is talking, the Grand Marshal, and Napoleon gives him a position in the engineers as an officer of the engineers, and he gives him a task. And then Bertrand comes back and says to him that, "I found the thing impossible." So Napoleon says to him, "Well, let's see how you are going about it, because," as Napoleon says here, That which you found impossible may not be so to me. So he then listens to Bertrand. Bertrand explains the issues. Napoleon comes back, makes changes, and Bertrand sees, yeah, it's logical, it is doable. And so Bertrand ends and says, in a few moments, I was perfectly convinced of the superiority of your majesty's plans, and this circumstance furnished me with sentiments and recollections which have since proved very useful to me. So Napoleon gave him a task, and then he thought the task was impossible when he wrapped his mind around it. He thought it impossible, and he came and complained to Napoleon, and Napoleon showed him, no, it isn't impossible. This and this and this is what you're doing wrong. You must do it in this and this way, and bang, there it goes. Notice here that these men have no problem looking up to Napoleon. They look up to him. They know he is great. They value his mind. They value his intelligence. And when he tells them things can be done, they know it is possible, even though their minds can't see it. And in this regard, when you're looking at really great men like Napoleon and Hitler and many, many, many others in all kinds of fields in Western civilization, you get a point where somebody is a genius, somebody knows his subject so well, he knows it intimately, and he can start seeing in his mind's eye, he can see possibilities that nobody else can see. Everybody else, when faced with the same problem, can't solve it, but he can solve it. And his mind is so strong, is so educated, is so practiced, that he can solve problems that others regard as impossible. This is something that happens right throughout the history of our race. And I return to Hitler. Just because Hitler achieved something doesn't mean everybody could have achieved it. Just because Napoleon or anybody else achieved all kinds of other things doesn't mean that everybody could have achieved it, that we're all equal. No, these men are ahead of their time. They can see possibilities that others can't see. But it is because they educate themselves, they are clever, they are talented, they put their minds to their tasks, they hammer away mentally, and they find ways to solve problems. So here we have two discussions that Napoleon has where people complained about something being impossible, and Napoleon told them that things that look impossible aren't necessarily impossible. It's just that you are not going about it the right way. And we will return to more examples. But I want to tell you that in ancient times, our ancient ancestors faced extreme problems which they also had to overcome. And if they didn't overcome them, we wouldn't be here. But facing difficult tasks and facing the impossible is also healthy. And I want to return to that topic. It is healthy for us to be challenged. It is healthy for us to face difficult and near impossible tasks. It really makes our minds work. And it's good for us. It's good for all of us. And living this soft shopping mall life is not healthy for us. It's not healthy for us. When I was reading through large chunks of these memoirs of Napoleon, I was very fascinated by many of their discussions that they would have. They would get together and they would have discussions. They would read passages from books. They would start talking about them, thinking about them. They really put their minds to work. We in modern society are very lazy. We're looking for outcomes. We're looking for easy answers. These people, when you look at the way they behaved, they would take a problem or any old thing, even a book, even a play, whether it's history, whether it's fiction, they would take something and they would wrap their minds around it. And they would keep thinking and debating and exercising their minds. In the same way that you might go to gym, they would exercise their minds. Our ancestors used to do a lot of this. In a lot of my reading of European history, I've realized this. Whites really put their minds to problems, and they carry on and on and on, and they work away at these problems and they start breaking them down. And that is how we've achieved many tremendous things. So, from Napoleon, the test of a genius. What is the test of a genius? It is not that you have enough resources to do what you need to do. It is that you are able to solve your problem even when you are missing tools and methods and mechanisms. Even if you don't have the resources to solve your problem, you still solve your problem. That is the true test of genius. And we, especially those of us who are white racialists and national socialists, we must spend our time thinking much more like this. We must think hard and deep and look at ways of breaking through, solving problems. Just because we don't have billions, just because we don't have things easy, doesn't mean that we can't do it. If we truly use our minds, our bodies, our discipline, our abilities, and we put everything that we have to the test, then you'll see how we solve problems. But I'm going to show you in The Gods of War, I'm going to show you in military terms how people solve problems, how white men have solved true survival problems when they were in deep, deep shit. And then you will start to grasp the true genius of our people. Because for us, it's not just sharpening our minds, it's also disciplining our bodies and having the mental and physical discipline and determination to face real danger. And then you'll see some of the amazing things that our people have gotten up to, which you just ignored when you were at school. You saw maybe a date of a battle that you read about, and you just learned the date and you were bored already. Meanwhile, you have no idea what those people went through and the fantastic things that were achieved. And guys like Napoleon, for them, solving problems was par for the course. He was doing this stuff all the time. Okay, let's take a look at a more recent genius. This is a man I've never mentioned in any of my videos before, but I'm going to give you some background on this guy. This is a truly amazing white man of modern times, and one of the products of Adolf Hitler's fantastic Germany. If Adolf Hitler did not do the things that he did, then this man would never have had the chance to do the amazing things that he did, and which all of the world is benefiting from to this day. The man I'm talking about is Wernher von Braun. He is in the photo on the bottom left and in the center. One of the sad things about the white right, the saddest thing about the white right, is that very possibly due to people becoming skeptical about everything, that people have also become skeptical about things like science. Because the Jews have lied about so many things and brought their Jewish crap into every aspect of our lives, I can understand that people have lost faith in all sorts of things. I did a video about this called Jew Shock, When Whites Go Wonky, and in there I discussed my Jewish shock and how I went wonky. And it is a phase that you go through, and then you have to sort of clamber out of it because you are shocked by the fact that everything you knew was a lie. Now you have to try and figure out which things are still lies and which are not. And very sadly, in the white right, a lot of good science, good solid science, has got a bad name because people are in a wonky state. And then you've got other idiots exploiting that and continuing to make them negative about it. I don't want to go into the wonky science. Instead, I want to just point you to a couple of things so that you can appreciate a few things here. And I'll explain to you about Wernher von Braun, the genius. During World War II, Hitler had people coming to him with all kinds of ideas. And Hitler had to determine, you know, which ideas is he going to spend money on, which ideas are worth spending money and resources on, etc. And the issue of rockets came up. And Hitler allocated funds and they built a base near the sea where they could begin experimenting with rockets and missiles. And the guy who came out there as the genius of that whole exercise was this guy, Wernher von Braun. Out of their experiments, eventually, they developed the V-2 rocket. The V-2 rocket was used mainly to pound Britain with, but the V-2 rocket was the world's first intercontinental ballistic missile. The V-2 was also the first device that actually went into space. The V-2 was also the first human-made device that traveled faster than the speed of sound. These guys were passionate about rocketry, and Wernher von Braun himself had lots of ideas about getting into space. Wernher von Braun went on to become the greatest genius of NASA. But the problem with Wernher von Braun is that Wernher von Braun was a German. Wernher von Braun was a Nazi. And you will recall my Boer Nazi pal, whose real name was Fanny Kruger, who was a lecturer in scientific method. Fanny Kruger spoke to me about Wernher von Braun, and he said to me that Wernher von Braun wasn't just a Nazi, he was SS. Hitler's plans for the SS was that the SS was going to be the elite of the future Reich. In Roman terms, the SS was the Praetorian Guard, the elite of the state. And the SS weren't just military men. They included lots of scientists. There were lots of brilliant people there. And that is what you must remember about what Hitler was doing. He wasn't just fighting a war. He was also looking for intelligence, brilliance, creativity. He took everything that was needed. He took brave men, strong men, clever men, etc., and he put them to good use. This ability to use all men is important. We will come back to that again. But the SS was choosing the finest men, finest women, putting them together, creating a future elite. Wernher von Braun was SS. So as Fanny said to me, he said, Nazis brought us space travel. Nazis created the space age, and it's not just Nazis, it's SS. German SS, the elite of the Nazis, brought us the space age. So, while Wernher originally dreamed of getting into space, he used his science for Germany for military purposes. The V2 was a fantastically complicated device, insanely complicated. The V2 was really an example of building an impossible device, a totally impossible device. That's how complicated this thing was. But these guys did it. The SS did it. They built something that was more complicated than anything that had ever been built on the face of the earth. Despite its complexity and its amazing science and engineering that was behind it, it was limited in what it could do. They managed to build this intercontinental ballistic missile that they could use to chuck on the British. But in reality, its actual military value was not that great. It was a fabulous, fabulous device, but its military uses weren't that good. So it was an incredible, insane piece of engineering, but in terms of its contribution to the war, it was really very minimal. What it probably really needed, which was created after World War II, was the computer. It really needed the computer in order to truly become what it needed to be. But in World War II, the Germans just didn't have that access to that kind of electronics. Even so, they did amazing things with it. Their ability to fire this up and send it high into the atmosphere and for it to travel and level out, travel the distance, fall down to the ground, etc., that required a kind of a mechanical computer, which was limited, but it was still a great achievement. But really, electronics and true software is what's taken the rocket and made it insane. But the rocket wouldn't have existed with those abilities if it wasn't for the work of these guys. They built these amazing rockets, got them to fly at incredible speeds over distances never achieved before, to heights never achieved before by humans. And it was done by these SS men. The V2 actually went into space. NASA's definition of space is 100 kilometers up, and the V2 actually achieved that height. I can't remember if the V2 achieved it when the Americans had captured V2s and they flew them in America in 1946 or so. But I do know that the V2 is the first object, first man-made object that actually truly entered space. Truly. So the Germans built the first device, the Nazis built the first device that went into space. On the top left is a quote from a guy called Walter Dornberger, where he says, "Do you realize what we accomplished today? Today, the spaceship was born." So Walter Dornberger was one of the guys working there. I think this quote refers to October 1942. October 1942. I think that is the main event that he's referring to there with the V2. So here were these Nazis, these SS people actually, building these beautiful rockets and experimenting with them. And these rockets were taking off, and they were flying, sometimes they were crashing, and other times they were falling into the sea. These are all the beginnings of NASA. You know, NASA used all these concepts later. That's why NASA had its original rocket launches, I think they're in Florida, so it could fall into the sea. All the same stuff. All these lessons that the Germans thought up from that time. So, where the impossible stuff comes up is the following. Is that the British, under Churchill, were busy studying and looking at all the threats that could possibly come from Germany. And then the British intelligence services and spies started getting information that the Germans have got these big rockets, and these rockets can fly at very high speeds and to great heights over great distances, etc. So the military intelligence people were getting information, sightings, various reports from people, from military people, from spies, etc. They were getting these reports that there are these freaking huge rockets that these Germans have got. And these rockets could be a real threat to the British. Now, Winston Churchill had his own personal science advisor, a guy called Lindemann. Lindemann's got some kind of German heritage as well. I've also heard it said that Lindemann was a Jew. But when I went on Wikipedia, they say that in his official biography, it denies that he was Jewish. So I truly don't know if Lindemann was a Jew. It would make sense that the Jews would try and grab a Jew and put a Jew in that position, but I'm not fully convinced. I'd love to know if there's more definitive information on this. When I look at some of Lindemann's own attitudes, he was very much into science, he was very much into eugenics, he was even, in a sense, a kind of a racist and a kind of a supremacist. So there are aspects of Lindemann that don't seem like they are Jewish. So he may have been a genuine white guy who was a genuine scientist of genuine skills. If he was a Jewish scientist of lower skills, that would have made more sense. But he actually seems to have been a pretty genuinely good science advisor. So Churchill sent Lindemann these reports of these German rockets. And Lindemann looked at these reports of these rockets. And Lindemann then looked at what options were available with these rockets. Because he knew the science, so he knew that you can only build rockets in a limited number of ways. You've only got a limited number of options to build these rockets with. And he was trying to use his science knowledge so that he could try and determine, can these things be a threat to Britain? So Lindemann knew that there were two basic ways that you could build rockets. The one was to build a solid fuel rocket, which is like fireworks. Fireworks is a solid fuel rocket. So the whole body of the rocket is the fuel itself, and you basically light it and off it goes. So the one option is a solid fuel rocket. The other option is to build a liquid fuel rocket. So theoretically, you could have a rocket that has got liquid as a fuel. And a liquid fuel rocket would have far greater performance than a solid fuel rocket. But the difference is that to build a liquid fuel rocket, nobody had built one because it's impossible. A liquid fuel rocket is way too complicated. Nobody had built one because it's insanely complex, and no engineers on the planet had solved the problem. So when Lindemann looked at all these reports, he was a big skeptic. He was thinking that these reports were even fakes. That they just couldn't be. That you couldn't have seen these kinds of things, and the things that are described are not physically possible. Because the only rockets that the Germans could possibly have built would be solid fuel rockets, and solid fuel rockets would not have that performance or that ability. So Because a liquid fuel rocket was impossible to build, Lindemann assured Churchill that these things didn't exist. They couldn't exist, they're not possible, they are beyond the bounds of engineering, etc., etc. He was utterly, totally convinced of this. The only problem is, he was wrong. The SS have done the impossible. They've done the impossible. They have built actual liquid fuel rockets that are freaking functioning. Not only that, but at some point in the future, those liquid fuel rockets will be flying across the English Channel and they'll be crashing on British soil and killing people. So these Nazis had actually solved all these problems. They solved these problems, they built and rebuilt these things, and they had done something totally and utterly impossible that even another scientist regarded as impossible. The guy who was the real brains behind all of this was Wernher von Braun. Now, Wernher von Braun was one of the many thousands of German scientists that the CIA brought to America after World War II, and they brought them into American society, and they found positions for them because they were insanely awesome. Von Braun went on to become the poster child of NASA. It must have sucked for these SS guys to now have to work for Americans, to work for their enemy, to know that they were working for people who destroyed what they truly believed in. There is an article I published on History Reviewed that came from somebody else who had worked for NASA, who had a blog. And I basically published an article about Wernher von Braun having some kind of SS insignia. I'm not sure if it was a ring that he wore. A ring that he wore that he left somewhere one day. And somebody found it, and von Braun came back. He realized he'd left it somewhere, and he grabbed this thing. But they'd seen that this has got some kind of SS or Nazi insignia on it. There was something that von Braun had. It was something he wore on himself. I think it's a ring. I could be wrong, but it was something that he had. And I published that. And if that is true, then it shows that even as an American citizen in NASA, deep down in his heart of hearts, he was still working for the National Socialists, for Germany, for the race. Von Braun went on to create the next most complicated piece of engineering in the history of the world. He'd created the first one, which was the V2, but when he was at NASA, he went and built the Saturn V rocket. The Saturn V rocket is the most complicated piece of engineering ever built. I'm not sure if it's still, possibly even to this day, it might still be the most complicated engineering device ever built, the Saturn V rocket that took men to the moon. And no, I'm not going to discuss the moon stuff. So the bottom line is that if you look at these Germans took us into space. Von Braun became NASA's poster child. He would give his presentations in English, but you could hear the German accent, and von Braun actually had lots of big ideas, including space stations, all kinds of stuff, really, really big stuff that could be built if the Americans wanted to plow the money into it. But they never went and did anything bigger than the moon rocket. They did lesser things, but they didn't go for the big space stations and all those things. You can find lots of film footage of Wernher von Braun, where he even made various presentations about his plans when he was at NASA. So von Braun became the poster child for NASA because he was the greatest brains that they had. I've even heard, and if anybody can find the source of it for me, I'd be very interested in this. Now I'm going to go a little bit backwards. Remember, we said that all kinds of people who don't have the ability to do things end up doing things because whites teach them. Well, we may have an instance where Americans couldn't do, white Americans, the best of the white Americans, couldn't do what the SS could do. I have heard it said that when they brought those rockets from Germany to America, and the white Americans were trying to build rockets and get rockets off the ground, that their rockets were exploding and failing. And eventually, eventually, they had to bring the Nazis in. And the projects had to be run by the Nazis. And only then did the rockets work. And that is also why Wernher von Braun, the Nazi, the SS guy, ended up becoming the poster child for NASA. Because if he wasn't around and those Germans weren't driving things and checking things, it wouldn't work, even if the white Americans were doing it. So it's a little bit of a slap in the face for the white Americans. And I've heard it, but I don't know the source for it. So if anybody ever finds out more about that, I'd appreciate that. So anyway, I thought I would leave you with some thoughts from Wernher von Braun, one of the most brilliant, brilliant, genius technical minds of modern times, who was able to do and who pulled off all kinds of feats that were impossible. They were impossible. Nobody could do it. British scientists said it was impossible. Possibly even Americans couldn't do it for a while, even if they had all the stuff in front of them. That's how freaking impossible it was. But this Nazi, he was doing it. In a sense, what may have happened with Wernher von Braun is similar to whites in Africa, in that if you take the white man and you have him at the top and he makes the plans and he does all the high-level heavy thinking, then the people below, including the non-whites, can then carry on and they succeed at what they're doing. When you flip everything over and you put the black on the top, and the black is making all those high-level decisions, and you put everybody else on the bottom, then you find that that system doesn't work. It doesn't work. It doesn't work even close to what it did when you put the white at the top. It is maybe a topic that I can delve into more, but it basically shows the critical importance of putting truly talented people at the top. And having a society function on a true meritocracy, where you've got to put people at various levels who are the best at those levels. And that when you do that, that you end up with a society that functions at peak ability. That is what happened definitely with Hitler, definitely with Napoleon, definitely with the Romans, etc. America originally was meant to be a meritocracy as well, I'm sure. Then Jews come in, Jews learn how to cheat the system, and they start totally stuffing it up. And then you get weird shit. Like men pretending or becoming women, becoming admirals, all kinds of crap. So, all kinds of bullshit then becomes recognized as intelligence. But I hope that from this presentation that you start to understand a few of the things about what genius really is. Genius is when you do the impossible. When you are willing to face impossible tasks and you achieve them anyway. And you'll see bits of genius coming out from whites under all kinds of conditions. There's one particular battle in Rhodesia, one particular big battle where the whites went and really smacked the blacks and killed large numbers of them. And one day in a video, I saw one of those black leaders actually saying that they were absolutely amazed at how the whites came and clobbered them out of the blue. They never in their wildest dreams imagined that the whites could or would be able to do this. And this black guy turns around and says, "How did you people do that?" He was genuinely impressed that the Rhodesian army came and flipping caught them out and slaughtered them like dogs. And they never saw it coming. It was something that was so beyond their imagination, they'd never conceived it was possible. It is a topic we'll tackle later. But this black was completely gobsmacked. He was genuinely impressed with the skill the whites showed. And make no mistake, Jews, blacks, everybody, they know what we're capable of. And they are just too disingenuous, too full of shit, and too inferior to admit the truth, the raw truth. So let's end with some quotes and thoughts from a tremendous genius of modern times who understood science, and in his life, he did lots of impossible things. By the way, the photo in the center is Wernher von Braun and his lovely wife and daughters. So it's good to see that the DNA was moving on. So the first quote I actually want to point you to on the bottom is this one from Wernher von Braun, where he says, "Science does not have a moral dimension. It is like a knife. If you give it to a surgeon or a murderer, each will use it differently." And this is very important. I really love that quote, and I hope that more whites will take that more seriously. It is false to believe that science proves Jews right. Or that science in somehow, science and technology works for the Jews and doesn't work for whites. It's actually totally the opposite. Science and technology works for white people more than for anybody else. You've just been fooled again by Jews grabbing onto things and stealing things and obtaining things through disingenuous methods, and now you believe that science somehow favors them. No, no. Look at the Germans, look at the Nazis. You'll see it's science technology all the way, and it worked like a bomb for them in everything. Science is actually the white man's greatest achievement. Science and engineering enables us to do truly insanely impossible things. So don't ever imagine that science in some way works against us. It doesn't. It's exactly like he says. It is knowledge, it is certain knowledge, and you can use that knowledge in any way you want. You can use it for good or evil. You can use it for good or evil for our own race. And we should be using our science and technology for the good of our race all the way. So let's just look at a couple of other quotes from Wernher von Braun. These are just a couple, but these are quotes with understanding. There's a quote from Wernher von Braun there on the top middle, which says, "If we continue at this leisurely pace, we will have to pass Russian customs when we land on the moon." So Wernher von Braun had lots of complaints about NASA. He had lots of complaints about NASA red tape, all kinds of NASA bullshit. There's lots of quotes from him, which I love, about NASA and red tape. He says things like, "We can deal with the problem of gravity, but the one problem we haven't solved yet is red tape." But there he is mocking NASA, saying that NASA is moving too slow in the space race. He's saying that in the race to the moon, which was the big thing in the 1960s, in the race to the moon, he's saying, "If we continue at this leisurely pace, we will have to pass Russian customs when we land on the moon." That's freaking brilliant, that. The Russians will be there first and it'll be theirs. And also, maybe a little bit of something in that quote shows you the German speed and intensity of the Germans. If we continue at this leisurely pace, you know, let's not fuck around. Let's move on, okay? You're moving real slow. We're not going to win if we operate this slowly. So a little bit of energy in there that you can pick up from Wernher von Braun. The one on the top right is, "The best computer is man." Obviously white man. "The best computer is man, and it's the only one that can be mass-produced by unskilled labor." I'm going to keep that quote. That is a brilliant quote. So that means it's the computer that you can make using the least amount of effort. Why? Because nature's on our side, by the way. We'll come back to that. "The best computer is man, and it's the only one that can be mass-produced by unskilled labor." So whites, get on to breeding, please. There's another one that I included there below that, which I think will give you a bit of an idea of the complexity of the kind of work they were doing. You can hardly begin to believe the complexity of what these people were doing. And he says, "It takes 65,000 errors before you are qualified to make a rocket." Make no mistake that that kind of quote has real meaning. If they say it takes 65,000 errors before you are qualified to make a rocket, make no mistake, that is really what they discovered. That is how complicated the process is. You've got to make sure that there are 65,000 things that are working properly. With regard to the Saturn V, I think the Saturn V had something like 1 million moving parts. You can just go and check up on it. Saturn V was insanely complex, the moon rocket. But I want to leave you with the greatest quote of all, because I love this quote more than any other. And this quote is a quote for the European race. And Wernher von Braun says the following. He says, "Don't tell me that man doesn't belong out there in space. Man belongs wherever he wants to go, and he'll do plenty well when he gets there." And that, my friends, is the greatest quote for the future until the end of time. Whites can live by that. I personally believe that whites can conquer that the European people can conquer the universe. I seriously believe this. And I know quite a lot about astronomy, I must tell you. It's been something that I've studied all my life. And I understand the vastness of what we are discussing. And even so, I'm telling you, if there's one species that can do it, European man can do it. So I want to remind you about it, and I'm going to go through it again. Von Braun, with typical German SS determination and intelligence, tells you, don't tell me that man doesn't belong out there. Man belongs wherever he wants to go, and he'll do plenty well when he gets there. And that is the final thought for the day. There is nothing our race cannot achieve. The universe is our playground. We just need to sort out some of the parasitic garbage that is holding us back. And then the stars can be ours.
So for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed, all the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid, a virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses, frisbee sports and fancy coffee too, energy efficient lights. And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
Thank the whites.